BBC Radio 4 News.
Well, with all that's been happening in Ambridge of late, one wonders what the few remaining days to Christmas can possibly hold. Will it be Home Sweet Home Farm with Debbie, Simon and Brian tucking into the turkey together? Then there's the Pargeters, of course. What has Santa got in store for young Freddie and Lily this Christmas? Not forgetting the Panto. There's only a few rehearsals left till it opens on Friday. But will Linda's pre-millennial tension get the better of her? Only one way to find out. Join us for the Arches each evening this week at 7 with a special half-hour edition coming up on Friday. But now, without further deviation, hesitation or repetition, it's about time we started a new series of this.
Welcome to Just a Minute. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Hello. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country and throughout the world, and also to welcome the four distinctive and individual players of the game who have joined me for this particular edition. We welcome back, on my right, that master of improvised comedy, Paul Merton, and beside him, a master of the witty comment, that is Clement Freud, and on my left, the master of the outrageous remark, that is Graham Norton, and being completely politically correct, I must say, and I say, the mistress of stand-up comedy, Linda Smith. Would you please welcome all four of them? And as usual, I am going to ask them to speak on the subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating from the subject. Beside me sits Janet Staplehurst, and she's going to help me keep the score and blow a whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the City Hall in that great city of Newcastle upon Tyne in the northeast of England. And we are part of the Newcastle Comedy Festival. And in front of us here in this fine hall, we have a real Geordie audience ready to cheer us on our way as we begin the show this week with Paul Merton. And the subject, Paul, Narcissus. Tell us something about Narcissus in this game, starting now.
Well, he was Greek, and he rather liked the look of his own reflection. He would get up in the morning, have a shave, and stand there in front of the mirror until it was time to go to bed. One day, he was walking past a lake, and he looked into the water, and he thought, "Ah, oh, I am so beautiful." And he stared into the H2O, and he thought, "I am so wonderful, I shall look at myself forever."
Clement Freud challenge.
Repetition.
Of what?
I am so.
Yes, I'm afraid. It's a tough game. Clement, that is a correct challenge. So you take over the subject of Narcissus, and there are 40 seconds starting now.
I've always been rather jealous of Narcissus because he admired his own image in a lake. And when I stand near water and look down, all I see is my stomach. Narcissus was an extremely good chap, called after a flower which has a large corona. Nicholas would know what that is.
A Paul Merton challenge.
A hesitation.
There was a hesitation, yes. It was going to the word of horticulture. Well, the horticulture, we got slightly confused. Right. So, Paul, you've got the subject back. You've got a point for a correct challenge, and there are 19 seconds available. Narcissus, starting now.
Of course it was undoing because he considered himself so beautiful that in the end he couldn't eat.
Clement Freud challenge.
He's been beautiful before.
Yes, when you were cheating before. Your first go, you talked about being beautiful. So, 14 seconds available for Clement Freud, having got another point. Narcissus, starting now.
Florally, a narcissus is daffodil-like. You can go to Cornwall and get jonquils, which are not unlike narcissi, which is the plural of narcissus, a word I can use again because it was...
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion was Clement Freud, and at the end of that round you naturally have assumed and understood that he has got a commanding lead over all the others. Paul Merton's got one, Linda and Graham have yet to speak, but Linda Smith, will you take the next subject? It's things to do with an egg. Tell us something about that in just a minute, starting now.
Things to do with an egg. I can see the virile men of Newcastle thinking, easy, things to do with an egg, you fertilise it. That's what you do with an egg, whether it's human or ostrich or platypus or chicken. They just...
Paul's challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
Trying to fertilise an ostrich egg.
Well, a another ostrich can do that quite easily.
But not the men of Newcastle.
I don't think she was conveying she wanted all these men of Newcastle to rush out and fertilise ostriches all over. There aren't many ostriches in Newcastle to fertilise anyway.
It's well, not a bad idea, is it? An ostrich is black and white, Newcastle fan, obviously. And if you had their long legs, you could see at the match better.
You'd have to hold on for grim death if there were the time the way they move across the
desert. Oh, you'd know about it, would you?
Oh, yes.
You've obviously thought it through, Nicholas.
Do you know that an ostrich egg is extremely hard and solid and is very... I don't know how they ever get them through the part of the anatomy they come to. But you can buy them. They sell them in South Africa. I've got a friend who's now done a deal with Harrods. And you can get enough for... You can get enough from the centre of an ostrich egg... They're interested. You can get enough... Paul, it was not a correct challenge because she wasn't deviating from the things to do with an egg. So, Linda, you keep the subject, you get a point for an incorrect challenge. You have 47 seconds to continue, starting now.
Now, Delia Smith has lots to do with an egg. In fact, she built an entire TV show around a pan of boiling water and an egg. Riveting entertainment it was too. Much better than walking with dinosaurs, I'm sure you'll agree. Other things you can do with an egg, they may be served in various ways, which include poached, fried, scrambled, boiled, hard or soft, souffléed, omeletted, roast, stewed.
You had to err eventually when you went through your list, but well done, Linda. But Graham, you came in, yes, we call that hesitation, and you have a correct challenge. A point to Graham Norton, and 19 seconds available for him to tell us something about things to do with an egg. Starting now.
Things to do with an egg. Well, really, you can do anything you like with an egg. You can build a house out of eggs if you want to. Sadly, it'll be messy and smell after a while. But you could. The one thing...
Paul Merton challenge.
Deviation. I don't think you could build a house out of eggs.
It would be smelly and messy, though.
No, it would be smelly and messy, but it wouldn't be a house.
No. I don't think it would be a habitable residence, Graham. I do think that was deviation.
I pointed that out!
I'll tell you what I'll do. Occasionally when I... Yes, what do you want to say, Clement?
You did say things you can do with an egg.
Yes.
What is an egg but a home for a small chicklet?
In this situation, somebody has to have the benefit of the doubt. I've decided to give it to Graham Norton so he can... Oh, you've got friends in Newcastle. And you've got 8 seconds as well to carry on with things to do...
That'll be long enough.
Things to do with an egg, starting now.
Oh, sorry.
And English time. Linda, you challenged.
Did I?
Yes, you did. Your light came on.
I'm sorry, it was a phantom challenge.
So if you decide you didn't challenge, Graham was interrupted.
Fair
he
enough.
Gets another point. He keeps the subject. There are 6 seconds. Things to do with an egg, starting now.
Don't go to work on an egg, because people at the office will laugh at the funny stain.
Paul,
that's rich talk, coming from somebody who says you can build a house with eggs.
So your challenge, Paul. Deviation.
Does it matter? Deviation.
Right, well, it's deviation from what he was saying before, so I give you the benefit of the doubt on this occasion and say, Paul, you have half a second. Starting now.
I'll never forget a day I first saw
Paul Merton, then, speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. And Clement Freud, you take the next round, please. The subject is serendipity. Tell us something about serendipity in just a minute, starting now.
It is very serendipitous to move house, even if you previously lived in one built of eggs. We recently transferred our address from one part of London to another of that same city, and the extraordinary thing of leaving the previous establishment in which we resided and picking up things about which we had entirely forgotten, like my first wife, Gladys, who appeared in a cupboard under the stairs, pictures of enormous wealth, cutlery, crockery, glassware, pictures.
Paul Tanner.
Honesty.
repetition of picture. 17 seconds for you, Paul, on serendipity, starting now.
I think one of the most interesting aspects of the word serendipity that I've been given 17 seconds to talk about is that if you were to ask me seriously, in all honesty, I would have to tell you I have no idea what it means. Hopefully that apology, which I convey to you now, will be enough to get you.
Paul Merton's honesty kept him going till the whistle went, and, Paul, it's your turn to begin. The subject, taking coals to Newcastle. I've 60 seconds on that subject, starting now.
It's a phrase meaning taking coals to Newcastle. If an area is particularly rich in a kind of product, then you would be ill-advised to take that self-same stuff to that place. It's like Clement Freud going to Disneyland. There would be a contradiction. So much happiness and gaiety in the air, it would be a mistake for him to even bother to attend that particular one in Europe. Of course, there's one in Paris, and you can go to Florida and other places in America.
Clement Freud challenge.
Repetition of places.
Yes, you did have too many places.
Did I?
Yes. So Clement has another point. He has the subject. He has 30 seconds. He has taking Coles to Newcastle, starting now.
If Stephanie Coles were to say to me, please take me on holiday, there is nowhere I would sooner convey her than to Newcastle under Lyme. A great town in the Potteries, not far from Stoke, about which good books have been written, like Anna of the Five T-O-W-N-S. I have to spell it because I've said it before. Newcastle, in the northeast of England, is a town...
So Clement Freud was then speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point for doing so. He's moved forward. He's still in second place, just ahead of Graham Norton and Linda Smith behind Graham, and in the lead still, Paul Merton. But Linda, your turn to begin. The subject, B-movies. Tell us something about that great genre, starting now.
B-movies. I love B-movies. My favourite B-movie of all is The Swarm with Michael Caine. It's marvellous. I love that bit where he says, but the bees have always been our friends. That's hilarious. It makes me laugh so much. I went to see another film called The Spirit of the Beehive, expecting it to be a B-movie, but of course it was rather disappointing because it was an arty Spanish film that was about fascism and Frankenstein. So a bit of a disappointment. Likewise disappointing was The Taste of Honey. Rita Tushingham is quite unusual looking, but she's not actually a bee. However, a very good film I could recommend to B-movie lovers would be The Third Bee by Orson Welles, a story of corruption and thrillers and love in post-war Germany, where Joseph...
Paul Merton challenge.
Well, there's no such film as The Third Bee.
No, there isn't.
The third man's based in Vienna.
So, Paul, 11 seconds, you tell us something about B-movies starting now.
There's a great many great films.
You get the
subject. That must be a record.
Graham, you came in first with your buzzer there. In the 8 seconds, you tell us something about B-movie starting now.
B-movie is a phrase meaning any film or motion picture containing Kevin Costner. You know, it's not going to be that good.
And Graham Norton, speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's now moved into second place behind Paul Merton. And the irony of this game is when you consider that Linda Smith went for 43 seconds on that subject, did all the work, didn't get any points at all in that round. And the others coming in at the end got
it's
the points.
It's her fault for talking rubbish.
I thought it was lovely rubbish anyway, so anyway, but that's the thing. But it was the contribution, the points are secondary. Graham Norton, it's your turn to begin. The subject, split infinitives. Tell us something about that particular subject in this game, starting now.
Split infinitives are wrong. We all know that. Infinitives should be together, but due to the pressures of modern English grammar, so many of them split up. There's a group
four split infinitives called SPLIM. It stands for Split Infinitive Management. They meet and have little agendas. They might have at the top of that piece of paper, item one, Graham Norton's talking, it's about on the radio, does he know what we are? I'm there. I defend myself, of course I do, to explain would be to patronise the lovely people of Newcastle who all do understand what a split infinitive is. So I won't go on about them in a technical way at all.
To talk for 53 seconds about something you didn't really know what it was all about was really great achievement.
I know.
And you won't get... And Linda's got in with a correct challenge. What is your challenge, by the way? Let's make sure I agree with it.
Our general exhaustion.
Oh, yeah.
A sympathy buzz.
Having him for hesitation, are you?
Yes, I think so.
Right, all right. Well, you're going to... He's done all the hard work. You get the point, and you've got 7 seconds. Split infinitives starting now.
Split infinitives are to do with grammar. Now, grammar to me is like homosexuality.
Oh. Clement, you buzzed first. Everybody spotted the grammar. 3 seconds, split infinitives, Clement, starting now.
I think it's quite wrong to say that split infinitives are not useful. They are...
So at the end of that round, Clement Freud speaking as a whistle when gained another point. He's moved forward. He's just 1 point behind our leader, Paul Merton, then Graham Norton and Linda Smith in that order. And, Paul, it's your turn to begin. The subject, woofers and tweeters. That's a good subject. Tell us something about woofers and tweeters in this game, starting now.
Well, of course, they're part of a loudspeaker. The woofers, as the name suggests, carries the bass note. Woof. Is the kind of deep noise that you would expect to get from a woofer. A tweeter, on the other hand, as you would expect to from that very... rubbish.
It seemed to dribble away.
How dare you.
So you're having hesitation, yes. 44 seconds for you, Graham, on woofers and tweeters, starting now.
Woofers and tweeters are a very old firm who supply hi-fi goods to the royal family. A large woofer and tweeters van pulls up outside Buckingham Palace and the good queen says, hooray! Large things to put in my house and play music on. It is no accident that Buckingham Palace is a large garden.
Clement Shallot.
Just thought I'd challenge.
What is your challenge?
I don't know.
Well, he did actually appear at Buckingham Palace.
Well,
but
that's
too late
really
now.
What
yes,
I
no,
thought,
no.
But
oh,
I...
That's fair enough.
No, it's too late now. He said he didn't have a challenge.
No, he does. Buckingham Palace has said it twice.
Clement, you have 22 seconds. Tell us something about woofers and tweeters starting now.
Woofers and tweeters, to those of us who don't have hi-fi, in which I would include myself, are dogs and birds, very nice things to have about the house. A woofer is simply a canine who says woof, whereas a tweeter is something that flies and goes tweet. Woofers and tweeters are exactly what you should give your godchildren for Christmas.
Clement Freud was speaking again as the whistle went. He is now just one ahead of Paul Merton, then Graham Norton, Linda Smith in that order. Linda, your turn to begin. We're up in Newcastle, the home of brown ale. Talk about it. 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Brown ale, the champagne of the north. The fuel of this great city that we find ourselves in. I have never drunk brown ale, but I believe it's a very useful commodity to have about you if you want to get completely out of your head for £3.50. Now, brown ale is unfortunately...
Paul Merton challenge.
A hesitation.
There was a hesitation, I'm afraid.
Terrible.
Yes, yes.
Terribly.
So, brown ale's with you, Paul. 43 seconds available, starting now.
Well, as Linda says, it's probably more of a northern drink than a southern drink. I think I have...
Clement Freud challenge.
Drink.
Two drinks.
Buckingham Palace.
Clement, you had a correct challenge. 37 seconds, brown ale, starting now.
In Suffolk, we have a very good brown ale, which is brewed by Adnams, and is called Broadside, which can't be very interesting to anyone here.
It's a hesitation.
That was a hesitation, Paul, yes?
You had I waited nice... for applause.
Don't indulge him, please. He didn't deserve anything, and he didn't get anything.
Well, don't rub it in.
29 seconds on brown ale with you, Paul, starting now.
My sister Angela was in the brownies and used to come back and tell me all about brown owl and the various things that have been get up to in the woods, looking for pixies and elves and goblins and fairies at the bottom of the garden.
Linda, challenge.
Deviation, I think.
Why?
She liked a brown owl, did brown ale.
She liked a brown ale, but she was, in fact, brown owl, so it's a different subject. Well, fairies, pixies?
No, it was a very strange branch of the brownies. There was a twist of beer.
They could, for all
I
know...
Who was in charge of them?
No, I could, for all I know, in that branch of the brownies, had a brown ale. We don't know. No, I don't know. You don't know.
Well, by the same token, you could have a house of eggs.
All right, I'll put it to the audience. You can be the final judge on this one. I have to make these decisions. If you agree with Linda's challenge, you can boo for Linda, and if you disagree, you can cheer for Paul, and you all do it together now.
And suddenly, it was no longer a show, it was a rally.
Right. Linda, you have the subject. It's brown ale. Back with you. You started with it. You got it back at last. 16 seconds starting now.
Brown ale, sadly these days, is not a fashionable drink, but perhaps it's now so unfashionable that it's acquired retro chic and will suddenly become trendy again. Hopefully other traditional products of the North, such as steel and shipbuilding and manufacturing...
So Linda Smith was speaking as the whistle went and gained that audience endorsement for her comments and has moved forward rapidly, but not enough to move out of fourth place, unfortunately. And Graham Norton, it's your turn to begin. And the subject is holding my breath. You look as if you're doing it now. But will you talk on the subject? 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
During some parts of my life, holding my breath is a skill I've tried to improve. But I'm still not that good at it. Think what you will. I remember as a child, though, thinking... Oh, I said thinking twice.
Paul Merton challenge.
Unfortunately, said thinking twice.
And he did say thinking twice, and he admitted his downfall. And 44 seconds for you, Paul. Tell us something about holding my breath, starting now.
This is how you hold your breath for 44 seconds.
Clement Freud was the first to challenge.
Hesitation.
Hesitation, yes. 41 seconds, you tell us something about holding my breath, starting now.
I've always believed that halitosis was better than having no breath at all. And people who suffer from that debilitating disease, or affliction would perhaps be a better name for it, tend not to breathe in order not to offend...
Paul,
you can't challenge on not.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
So, Paul, another correct challenge, holding my breath, 24 seconds, starting now.
It was a game that I used to play when I...
Clement Freud,
repetition.
Of what?
Words. Just one after another.
It's a clever idea, Clement, but... all right, give Clement a bonus point. He obviously wants it, and... Paul was interrupted, so he gets a point for interruption. He keeps the subject. 22 seconds, holding my breath, Paul, starting now.
I remember when I had my first swimming lesson. It was at Sutton Baths, and the teacher there insisted that we dive in at the deep end, stay on the bottom as long as possible, holding our breath. There was one boy who was particularly good at it. He's still down there, in fact, and that was in 1968. So it just goes to show that if you've got real dedication, you can succeed in holding your breath longer than you possibly thought.
Paul Merton, then speaking as the whistle went, gained the extra point. And Clement Freud, you take the next round, please. The subject is out-of-body experiences. Oh, my goodness. It depends on the body, really, doesn't it? Anyway, 60 seconds as usual, Clement, starting now.
Out-of-body experiences. There is, in my body, a thin man who's been trying to get out for many years now. He is about 11 stone... has lots of hair, more teeth than I, and ears which protrude, unfortunately. But this chap who occupies...
Paul Merton.
Yeah, what's your chance?
Well, we're not expected to listen to this, are we? He's got a man inside him. He's got protruding ears.
Is that why he can't get out?
I think it's very devious from out-of-body experiences, but...
He's 11 stone?
Okay, Paul, I agree with you. You have a point,
what's
of course.
What's his challenge?
Deviation from out-of-body experiences. That's a fantasy you have about somebody inside your body.
I mean, it's a fantasy we all share that inside us we have an 11 stone man.
That's right, yes. I would call...
Some more than others, perhaps.
Might be described more as an in-body experience, really.
I think we ought to exclude Linda from that generalisation.
I'm going to give the benefit of the doubt to Paul and say you have 33 seconds on out-of-body experiences, Paul, starting now.
I've only ever vomited on alcohol once, and that was about 3 days before I got married. I went on my stag night, and it's a traditional thing to do, a bunch of men go out together, and I drank a lot of beer. I seem to remember brown ale was one of them. And I was sick all over...
Graham Norton charged.
A woman shouldn't be at a stag night. Brown ale, do you see?
Graham, a lovely idea, a lovely thought, a lovely interruption. We give you a bonus point because we enjoyed it so much.
Bog all, get off.
Paul was interrupted, so he gets a point for that. He keeps the subject, 19 seconds available. Out-of-body experiences, Paul, starting now.
There is a phenomenon which some people believe in that's called astral travel, where you can travel or... I'd have to try and make up a word.
Yeah. Clement, you got in first. Yes, he couldn't get another word out for travel, so you got in with 12 seconds to go on the subject of out-of-body experiences, starting now.
The body that I would most like to out-of experience has,
I think hesitation.
You're right, yes. His body was getting very clogged up there, wasn't it? So, Linda, we're all going to hear from everybody on this subject. That's good, because it's the last one. It's the last round. And, Linda, you have 6 seconds to tell us something about out-of-body experiences starting now.
I have never had an out-of-body experience, but I did once open a tin of Tizer and lemonade came out. Now, you try explaining that.
Linda Smith speaking as the whistle went, gained an extra point and has moved forward. And I said just a minute ago there was no more time to play just a minute, so let me give you the final situation. Linda, who contributed so much, did unfortunately finish in fourth place, but only just behind Graham Norton, whose contribution was equally exciting and delightful. And just ahead of him was Clement Freud, but 1 point, only 1 point, separated him from Paul Merton. So, Paul, we say this week you're the winner. Well, it only remains for me to say thank you to these four excellent and extravagant players of the game. Paul Merton, Graham Norton, Linda Smith, Clement Freud. I also must thank Janet Staplehurst, who's been helping with the score, blowing her whistle. We must thank the creator of the game, Ian Messiter, and, of course, our producer and director, Chris Neal. I also want to thank this lovely Geordie audience here in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, who've come from all parts of the North to cheer us on our way. You've been fantastic. We've loved being here. I tell you what... Would you like us to come back again? Yeah. From all on the panel, from me, Nicholas Parsons, and from this lovely audience, goodbye. Tune in next time we play Just a Minute.
And isn't it good to have it back? If you missed any of tonight's edition, there's another chance to hear it on Boxing Day at midday. Don't forget there's comedy on offer each weekday evening at 6:30. Tomorrow, Graham Garden and Griffreys Jones star in Do Go On. Wednesday finds us following the fortunes of Simon Brett's 3 40-somethings in No Commitments. Thursday winds up our satirical thriller In the End, while on Christmas Eve, Simon Hoggart leads out the troops for a news quiz Christmas special. That brings us to Christmas Day and a festive Radio 4 at its very best.
Guess who's coming to BBC Radio 4 this Christmas morning?
It is I, Master. Mighty genie of the lamp. International
heartthrob and former KGB love rat.
After a star-studded panto, Stephen Fry joins the lineup for a special I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue.
And on Home Truths, singing turnips, household pets that use public transport, the walnut that brought nighttime terror to Daventry, and the toad that travelled to China in a trainer. I've only made one of those up.
Your Christmas morning lineup on BBC Radio 4.
BBC Radio 4, the news at 7 o'clock. The number of people killed by floods and mudslides in Venezuela is now thought to be at least 10,000. Some reports say as many as 20,000 may have died. Tens of thousands more have been left homeless by the disaster, which was caused by torrential rain last week. The country's president has called on better-off Venezuelans to adopt a family each for Christmas. Russian forces in Chechnya have been accused of carrying out a massacre of more than 40 people. Residents in the village of Alkhanyurt say Russian soldiers threw grenades into cellars where civilians were hiding and beheaded others. Two Russian colonels are said to have been arrested. An 87-year-old British woman who spied for the KGB is to escape prosecution. Melita Norwood admitted passing secrets to Moscow after she was exposed in a book by KGB defector Vasily Mitrokhin. The Solicitor General said there was no hope of a successful prosecution of Mrs. Norwood or a